Today is March 28th. Just touching upon the what some commentaries do with, stay with me here, everybody. Vayira, Vayetzer lo. Yaakov sees Esav approaching with 400 men, and Esav didn't say anything. He just says there are 400 men coming. Surely Esav could have told Yaakov's malachim, his messengers, why is he coming? Is he coming to bring me a birthday cake? Is he coming to bring me a card, a gift or something? I certainly have gifts for him. Right? The Foshur says that it was the gifts that mollified him. Right? Oh, how can I kill my brother after giving me 550 animals? Right? That wouldn't look good in the papers. Sforno says he meant to kill him, but he says, well, that's not a good fight. He's limping here with little kids. It's not going to read well in the paper. Esav kills limping brother. No, it's not a good fight for me. Right? Rashi goes one step further. Rashi says he tried to kill him, but Hashem didn't let him. And the teeth marks on the top of Vayishokehu. Right? Rashbam says he brought the 400 men there to show him respect. So why didn't you tell Yaakov's messengers that? Then B'chor Shur comes in and says, because it was mischief. He wanted Yaakov to worry. Let Yaakov think the worst. I'm not going to kill him. He's my brother. And besides, Daddy's still alive. He's cooled down by then. So when Yaakov says, Vayira Vayetzer lo, the question, are we going to derive something from each of these statements? He's afraid of one thing, he's distressed from another thing. Or you're just going to say like Ibn Ezra and Rashbam on this particular case, and say, there's nothing there. He was afraid and distressed by the situation. The same situation. You don't have to point to two separate situations. You get it? Essentially, B'chor Shur agrees with Rashi that there's something to be derived differently from one word to the other. It's just that, what is that? Okay? Everyone got me? I just want to give you one very familiar example of this. Paro gave instructions to midwives to kill baby boys. You all know the storyline? Right? Can everyone concentrate on what I'm saying here? Okay. The pasuk says, "Velo asu ka'asher diber alehen melech Mitzrayim." The women did not do as the king of Egypt told them. But to chayena, yeah, is hayiladim. Okay. So most English translations just read they let the boys live. Right? But someone like Rashi is not going to suffer those last three words to mean that. Look at the board and tell me why. Midwives, they did not do as the king of Egypt told them.
What's the question?
Rashi says that these words here can't mean they let the boys live. Rashi writes, "Misafkot lahem ma'ayim."
Because they would already be
alone. He gave them help.
Because they would already be. Well, I think two things. I think number one, "v'tachayena" implies that they give them life.
I like that. Yes,
but also, it's a double. As soon as you say that they didn't listen to what Pharaoh said, that obviously they allowed them to live. So it can't just be. It can't just be simply.
Right. Because I already know from the first statement, because the power told them to kill the boys. So when it says they didn't listen to what power told them to do, I know they didn't kill the boys. So why tell me, Klomar, Betzachin HaSeiladim? I know that already. Don't tell me what I already know. Right? Rashi approaches the Torah by saying that every extra word has to be accounted for.
Yes, I was going to say that with the whole Rashi's thing, maybe when they say they didn't follow Paul's directions, it just said that it would have meant they let the boys live. But adding they let the boys live meant maybe they helped them in the process, and they maybe hit them and made it more likely.
That's what Rashi writes. Rashi gives a few examples of some of the positive things they did for them. In addition, Mr. Furry says what Ramban says in Devarim, "Ramban lo techayet al neshama." It doesn't mean don't let the Canaanites live. It means don't help them. All right, but be it as it may, the but you see that, that there is general insistence that extra words teach extra things. You get it? I'm going to give you two more examples after Mr. Donner's question, yes?
Perhaps what it also could be related to the fact that maybe they just didn't listen to par in terms of, like if they didn't write the Tehillim and Tehillim, then you could assume, oh, maybe they just killed the kids, but not in the way that par requested. I mean, par requested that we throw them into the river.
Paro told them when you give birth to a baby on the birth stool, kill the baby, kill the boy, and that's all point here. Make it look like an accident.
Oh, this was.
Oh, your child
was
born, I'm not breathing. Oh, look at that, what a shame, he fell on the floor. Right. This is before he said, be able to follow him up. It's a reaction to this.
And this didn't work, right?
Okay. Okay, now, when you hear the words, ve'otzar es ha-shamayim, the first thing you're thinking of, meaning the heavens are stopped up, is that it won't rain. Right? What else does stopping of the heavens mean?
Meaning that there's no one's dying?
The Gemara says, that's too much trash. But the Gemara says that because the pasuk continues, v'lo yihyeh matar meaning rain, the top line can't mean there won't be rain, because then the pasuk is just repeating itself. So the top line may mean there won't be hail, there won't be snow, there won't be wind, there won't be clouds, there won't be other things that stop up the heavens. You get it? Okay? Okay, everyone clear with that? So the Gemara says this in the beginning of Maseches Tainis. I think there's a one. Whenever there's an extra word, it's got to be teaching some additional thing. When Rivka is introduced, she's called a Vesula, Asher Lo Yidah Ish. She was a Vesula that no man had known. Right. Do you see that even in this case, even someone like Ibn Ezra is going to be bothered by this? The word Vesula has appeared already in the Torah. Lo said to the men surrounding his house, I have daughters in Vesula, you take them and do whatever you want with them. Torah didn't feel the need then to tell us what the Vesula means. Right? Following, saying, why did I have to know here that no man knew her? You see Ibn Ezra on this pasuk. Ibn Ezra is one of five places on this pasuk where he quotes what Rashi says. He doesn't like Rashi. He very rarely quotes it. He writes about what Rashi says. I saw what that French commentary wrote on this. Those kind of things should not be written in a Torah commentary. Can you remember? Remember this very, very famous Rashi in this one? No? Why do they have to tell me? I know what the word Bisula means. Thank you. It's like saying in English, Rivka was a virgin and no man had sex with her. What would you do with that in English? Pick like Bill Clinton if you want. You're too young for that maybe. But that would be a great example. Right, Bill Clinton said, I did not have sex with that woman. Was he right?
Yeah.
No. Oh, no. He had like all excuses.
So then he said,
like,
it depends. Is there a sexual relationship? Well, it depends what the word is means. Then he said, it depends what the word sex means. Yeah. In halacha, if he asked for a halachic description, he was telling the truth. Right? In terms of what would prohibit a woman from her husband, right? Now, a husband may be disgusted by a woman who even kisses another man on the mouth, but everything short of frontal sexual intercourse does not, well, also anal intercourse would prohibit a woman from her husband. But other forms of sex don't. Okay? So he was technically telling the truth, according to halacha. There was a rabbi in this college who was called upon to actually defend Clinton that he was telling the truth when he said, I did not have sex with that woman.
Did you hear Joe Lieberman die?
Who died?
Did you hear Joe
Lieberman? Oh, yeah, no, yes. Hold on. Does anybody now know what Rashi said about this?
That it wasn't like that, it, that she didn't have any type of
sex. She didn't have any type of sex. She didn't have sex from that would make her no longer a virgin. And she didn't have any other type of sex. That's what Rashi wrote in the section. That's what Ibn Ezra wrote. You shouldn't write things like that in the Torah commentary. Little children will be reading that. Okay? It's enough that they know what a basula is, but you don't have to write that kind of stuff. Right? That shouldn't be in the children's section of the library either. Not in Rashi's commentary. Right? Okay. That's Ibn Ezra.
Yeah, like, there's a lot in off, like, this rape.
I understand. But you know, no one's forcing you to write this. What else might this mean? And now, what's fascinating is Rashbam, who invented the terminology of biblical parallelism. He's the one who coined the term. It's called Kefel Ha'inyan B'Milin Shonot, meaning nothing else but just a stressed point. Right? He says, she was a basula, we know what that means. This means she never even had a boyfriend. She never held hands with anybody. She never had any lo yita'ah does not necessarily mean sexually, even though that's what it did mean earlier, the yita'ah adam. Right? Okay? The last 15 minutes have been brought to you by trying to figure out what Vayigra by Yitzhilo means. When you see double expressions like that, you see you have different approaches. Okay? Rashi generally takes Chazal's approach. Rashbam and Ibn Ezra generally say that it is just repetitive with no additional meaning whatsoever, unless, like here, I think Rashbam does a better job than Rashi on this. And it's clean, it's something Ibn Ezra can live with. Right? Shuli Da'ish means no man even had a relationship. Okay. This is what I just want to do in the time remaining is that voracious needs are a lot of help. Voracious needs tikkun. A lot of things gone wrong in voracious. A lot of disappointment. Of course, the world had to be destroyed. Right? The tower had to be destroyed. Man gets kicked out of his world, out of the garden. What works in this book? First two siblings, one kills the other. What a piece of work is man. Right? There's a lot of trends, a lot of people traveling and moving and leaving home. Rootlessness and exile, and famines and barren wives. But the one trend that transcends the entire book is brothers, his sibling rivalry. It starts in chapter 4, but the first siblings to the last siblings, there's what to talk about. And of course, the last siblings make the final ticket. One of you mentioned it last class.
Moses and
Aaron. What? Moses well, and Aaron. That's to prepare for that.
We were saying in Genesis.
That's Ephraim and Menashe. That's only Yosef who complains to this arbitrary, at least in the other cases, you can find a reason why, you know, the favored son or whatever else. But here, the reader gets no indication whatsoever of why Ephraim is at random. At least it might be because of something they did before. Yaakov tells Yosef Ephraim is going to be chosen because of something that's coming afterwards. Yahushua's from Ephraim. The kings were from Ephraim. Menashe, not so much. Menashe gets Gidon. Chazal also say that Menashe was the one who chased after the brothers to find the cup. And that's what caused the brothers to rip their clothes, it says. They ripped their clothes when they saw that the cup was in Binyamin's. So Chazal loved to do this kind of thing. What was the comeuppance for Menashe? To have their clothes ripped. Their land will be ripped. Half on this side, half on that side. I think a better reason why Menashe is on both sides of the Yarden. Only try. They didn't ask. Go look in Parshas Matos. Only Reuben and Gad asked. And all of a sudden it says, and then Reuben and Gad and Chazishavun, who said that? Who mentioned them? Right? Very simple. That's such a simple pshat. Why Menashe is there.
Rabbi, it's a good thing to be on both sides.
Is what?
It's a good thing to be on both sides.
In the Hanami, but I'm just saying that it was for a good reason, not a bad reason. The good reason is that look in, say, Parshas Chukas, these lands that were conquered from Sihon and Og, right? Some of the lands all the way up north, what we call today the Jordan, Syria, and Lebanon, was conquered by, it says in the Torah, by the descendants of Menashe. So Moshe gave it to the descendants of Menashe. Makes sense? Got it?
Can you get that one?
In other words, if Reuben and Gad had not asked for land on that side of the Arden,
they would not have gotten it.
I don't know, would Moshe have just released it and said, okay, we're going to Israel, and then just whoever wants to go take it? Or would he have given it out to other tribes? I don't know, it's academic. But what's Menashe doing there? There are drushes also that Menashe loved the land more than any other tribe. Really? How does that fit with the fact that half of them found their way outside of the land? Well, first of all, where did you get that? Where did Chazal get that the children and the descendants of Menashe loved the land? Has to be a hook. Has to be a story.
Brian, they're the ones who tried to escape Egypt early.
Okay, that could be they love the land too. But the Medrash says that the descendants of Yosef did with that in mind. But because five of their daughters insisted that we want to have land.
Slavchot
is a grandson of Menashe. So it's not just that, and the Medrash makes it that kind. It says, the other tribe said, Nitna Rosh Vishuva Mitzrayim, let's go back to Egypt. But the daughters of Slavchot, they said, Lamani, why should we lose a chance to have the land because we didn't have brothers? So that is, that's how Menashe is on there. But let's get back to here. If Menashe basically is the one who saves Bereshis by being okay with it, so to say. He complains, only Yosef complains. But Dad, no, that's the wrong hand. Right? But along the way, we have to, now this is now the, essentially the sixth part of this class now. We're closing in on. We did creation, early man, Avram 3, Yitzchak 4, Yaakov 5, now we're doing the Shvatim. Because there, in order for the nation to thrive in Sefer Shmos, right? This is the first time we're called Am Yisrael. Who calls us Am Yisrael for the first time? It's interesting. The last time we're called in Shmos, we're called Beit Yisrael. Last pasuk, the whole Beit Yisrael. Interesting. Paro. Paro says, Hein am b'nei Yisrael rava tzum rimenu. Hava nishak malo. Right? So, but we are a nation by that time, no doubt. But how is a nation going to thrive if a single family unit can't get their act together? Right? The nation is dysfunctional, kimat. So what hope do we have as a nation? The family is dysfunctional. Yes.
Why? Why is it that we can never call B'nai Yisrael children of... Is that better for the Yaakov? That's like
yes.
God, and why is it not?
B'nai Yisrael, the sons of a man named Yaakov, and then their tribes become B'nai Yisrael.
Why is it not based on the Abraham? Since God has promised them that he's going to have...
Because then you're including Ishmael and 10 other sons of Abraham. And if you say Yitzchak, then you're including Esau. This way, Yaakov is the only one where everyone is included. So here is the, what I present. This is what we're going to be doing next week. Is that the Yosef? Remember, let's try to stay as much to pshat as possible, but I will allow for a delving into drash as long as I give you the reason why the drash exists. All right. Yosef is hated because he gives Diba Tamra up, right? He gets the ketonet, shows the favoritism, he got an education, he got the long sleeves, he didn't have to work in the fields like the brothers, he gets the tunic, and the chalamot, his dreams. Comes up, right? They use the ketonet to trick the father, right? Here comes the dreamer. Let's make sure his dreams don't ever come true, right? Okay. And Yosef, from his standpoint, right, are you familiar that there are three things that Rashi mentions from the Medrash that he said about them? His Dibatam. So one is that they're abusing the Shvachot, they're calling them slaves. Two is that they're eating Aver Minachai. That one is a bit nebulous. So three is they are Hilarites. They're sleeping around with Knana, and Yaakov doesn't even know about it. The Aver Minachai one should give us a little pause. What is that? Why? So, why choose Aver Minachai? Why not say they're stealing?
What's the problem with the third one? They didn't have the Torah, they messed up.
Okay, but this still should be a modicum of propriety about.
Maybe it's a joke, like a sentence.
Okay, it's interesting you mentioned that we have recently found some caves of ways that some ancient hunters kept their animals alive for as long as possible, especially in the summertime. They didn't have refrigeration. If you kill an animal, it's going to spoil in 6 hours. You know, you're going to get sick eating that meat. So what do? You hang them up by two legs, you lop off pieces of the animal, like a big lop off the arm, and you stanch the bleeding. The animal's going to be in great pain. We live far away because it's going to be screaming every moment. And then you do it to the other side, and then this way you can save the animal, the bulk of it, when you have to actually kill it to eat it, you'll take, and when you have a big barbecue for everybody. But meanwhile, you can feed your family for 2 days with this leg, 2 or 3 days with that leg, and the animal's still alive, so the blood is circulating, it's not spoiling, and then you kill it when it's time to... And then, so they saw this in caves, different stages of how they're preserving the animal. If you could be so cruel to an animal, you may be so cruel to a person. The contrapositive of that is not necessarily true. If you are kind to an animal, it does not mean you will be kind to humans. But if you could be so cruel to an animal, Tzar Bale Chaim Mipaskin is Deoraisa. Right? Prika and Te'ina, Bokum and Tzir. So Aver Minachai becomes this way of accusing them. However, there's an interesting halacha. Shechita, when you shecht an animal, right? Studies have been shown that animal can still actually give birth with a severed head. Right? Animal still gives birth for 30, 45 seconds, a minute. So if you have the chickens running around after the head's been, still runs around a little bit. Right? So once you do shechita of Ben Noach, cannot eat from that until that 45 seconds, a minute, 2 minutes is over. But a Ben Yisrael, it's famous halacha in Maseches Chulin, that something that's permitted in eating to a Jew is still usher to a Ben Noach. Because a Ben Noach doesn't have shechita. He has to wait till the animal is actually dead and not moving. A Ben Yisrael, however, so do you see that by accusing Ibn Menachai, it's Chazal's clever way of saying, Vayovei Dibatam Ra'ah, El Abihem. It's a bad sign for the father who married two sisters. If you're married to two sisters, you have a din of a Ben Noach. If you felt you had a din of a Ben Yisrael, you wouldn't marry two sisters. Right? Get it? By eating what looks to Yosef like Eva Minachai, makes Yaakov look bad. A Ben Noach has to wait longer.
Yeah.
And right? By eating it sooner, you're claiming we have a din of a Ben Yisrael, not a Ben Noach. Now, this is assuming all kinds of things, but Ramban, actually his commentary proves this. He says that's why Rachel had to die just before they got to Israel. They kept the Torah, but only in Israel. A Ben Noach cannot eat that animal while it's still... Well, you know,
so basically, his complaint was that they were eating.
It looks like they're eating Eva Menachai.
But how does that translate? So, isn't a Ben Noach allowed to marry?
Yosef saw them shechting an animal
and eating it right away,
and eating it and lopping off limbs right away.
Yeah,
implying that they feel that they have a din of a Ben Noach.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, of Ben Yisrael.
Ben Yisrael, right.
But I say we all have a din of Ben Noach because daddy married two sisters. Right? I say we don't have a din of a Ben Yisrael. We have a din of Ben Noach. You hear it?
Yeah.
So does Yosef saying that?
So Yosef, by bringing this report, daddy, listen, look how they're eating. Right? Look how they're eating. It makes you look bad for marrying two sisters.
Okay. So them eating it as the din of
Yisrael, Sefer Chulin,
makes Yaakov look bad because he married two sisters. They see them holding themselves to the higher standard is...
Right, makes Yaakov's lower standard. Now Ramban says that's all mistaken, but there's a deeper meaning going on here. The deeper meaning is that these brothers are not getting along because of misunderstandings. They're not talking things out. Right? Yosef, you jumped to conclusions. Turns out that when they did eat, it says by Yishchatu, they shechted. And you claim that they call each other slaves, that the Leah's children mock the four Dan, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher as slaves. You'll be sold as a slave. Right? In Gilui Arayos, you're claiming that they're sleeping around? You're going to have a real problem with Gilui Arayos. Remember what animal Rashi called that? Did you remember the Rashi? I'm going to sick on you the bear. The bear, he calls, Rashi refers to Potiphar's wife as a bear. I'm going to sick on you, the bear. In other words, someone who's going to pounce on you and I'll show you Gilui Arayos. You're going to suffer from Gilui Arayos. In other words, it's Rashi's way. Rashi has an incredibly creative way of doing this, but it's in Medrash. Quoting the Midrashim that Yosef, you're one brother, youngest brother, what do you have to enhance your standing with your father by telling bad reports about them? Chayecha, each one of those reports are going to come back to haunt you. Okay. Turns out there's something with Egyptians also in this, because Egyptians had even a higher standard of eating. They didn't eat meat at all at this time. Yeah, that's why the Egyptians wouldn't eat with the Hebrews when they came. Remember? So... But let's look on this side. Then we're going to analyze all of these inside the text. But on this side, the Dibatam Ra'ah Yosef is going to exact some of what they accused him of being. I just wanted to be helpful, guys. Yeah, but you know what? What do you think happens later in the story? Because the first thing he accuses them of doing when they get there is...
Being spying.
Spying. You're always spying on us, Yosef. You're always looking at us and telling Daddy whether we're doing the job right or whether we're doing it wrong. And you're always telling him that you have better advice of what to do. What, right? So Yosef gets even. The first thing he accuses them of doing is to being spies. He knows they're not spies. When they came to Egypt, remember?
Yeah.
So many of you have to come to get food? Right? Rashi piles on by saying that, remember that they came in through 10 different doors so as to avoid Ayin Hara. Right, but he accuses them of being spies. And you can see in the story it's fucking interesting. You can tell someone is lying. Like, listen carefully to these two lines. Ready? Anochi Esav b'chorecha osisi kasher dibarta elai kumna sheva v'achlo mitzedi bavor t'vorchani nefshecha. Ani bincha b'chorcha Esav. Okay, which one is Yaakov and which one is Esav?
The one that's all stretched out.
Is?
Yaakov.
Right. Because when you're not telling the truth, and Chazal go to great lengths to show that Yaakov really didn't lie, but when you're not telling the truth, you speak too much. You say more than you need to. Right? Because when Yosef asks them, where are you from? They tell him too much information. They tell him more than they need to. And when you tell someone more than you need to, it seems like you're hiding something. It's like Ibn Ezra writes in his commentary, when someone swears to God on simple things, you know they're lying. Because they think so little of their own word and the acceptance of their own word that they feel they have to bring God into it to be believed. People who constantly swear to God, you know that that's an untruthful person. And they feel it themselves. And if you try to give them Musar about stopping to swear to God, they'll say, I'll swear to God, I'll stop. Right? More is less in these kind of things. Okay, so when the brothers tell a little too much, I mean, that's part of the original. Try to look up for this. When Yehuda is making his plea for Binyamin in Parshas Vayigash, right? He starts off by saying, you asked us, do we have a brother? Or a father? Adoni sha'al, hayesh lachem av o'ach. Yehuda. That's not written in the Torah. I'm not saying everything has to be written in the Torah. Right? Everything has to be, that's hinted at, and it has to be written in the Torah. Right? In Parshas Shoftim, it says, the king may not amass too many horses, because then he'll go back to Egypt, the place I told you not to go. There's no such pasuk in the Torah that says we're not supposed to go to Egypt. Sorry, there is none. Ibn Ezra points it out, and he's correct. There's a pasuk that promises us that we won't see the Egyptians this way again in the future. But that's not a mitzvah that says, don't go back to Egypt. The mitzvah of not going back to Egypt is not written in the Torah, it is referred to in the Torah. Don't go back to Egypt, the place I warned you not to go to. Right? It's a big chiddush. One of the 613 mitzvahs of the Torah is not written in the Torah itself. It's only hinted in the Torah. You know what I'm saying? So, it could be, I mean, when Yaakov told Esav, you go on to Har Seir, I'll go and meet you there. It never says in Bereishis that Yaakov went to Har Seir. So, B'chor Shor says, of course he went. How do you know? Because he said he was going. He went. It's not written in the Torah. Right? Now, here. Adoni Sha'al Hayesh Lachem Av O'ach. You asked us, do you have a father or a brother? And we didn't hide anything from you. We told you everything. And then you want to know about a young... So we told you. Excuse me, Chevra. Yehuda. When Yosef and his brothers first meet, he did not ask them. He did not ask them about, do you have a father or a brother? They volunteered that information. So why is Yehuda lying to him in Parshas V'Yigash? Can you give me a simple, simple answer? He's not lying. What? No, because the Tanakh doesn't have punctuation. It's a question. Adoni Sha'al Hayesh Lachem Avoach? Did you ask us if we have a father or a brother? No, we volunteered that information. Oh, now it's true. You know what I'm saying? In other words, if you don't have question marks in the Torah, if you just read it as it is, then it is going to look like you asked us if we have a father and a brother, and we told you. What do you want from us? Right? So if you read it as a question, all right, that's true. We volunteered that. Yosef could have, although Yosef at this time is relenting. He could have responded to them, you're right. I didn't ask you if you had a father and a brother, and that's why I thought you were spies. Because you volunteered me too much information. If you give me too much information, that's a sign that you're lying. Just answer the question. Okay, so because they accused him of spying, he's got to come full circle and accuse them of spying. He knows it's not. Listen, Yosef has 9 years to prepare for this. He knew the brothers were coming. What is Yosef, this vindictive brother who has to make his dreams come true? Why is he doing this?
Maybe he feels like he has to make his dreams true.
Okay, it's more like Ramban, but the Abravanel says something very interesting. Abravanel uses a Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva. Can you see what the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva is why Yosef is doing this? Huh? Yes?
So I think that the Shubra Shlema is being in the same situation and acting the same things.
Correct.
In the situation where
Shubra Shlema can only be accomplished if you are put into a similar situation as the egregious sin that was committed. Right?
Remember in the Gemara in Sanhedrin where David at the end of his life, he's very cold, and you get this beautiful woman to minister to right? Remember her name?
Avishag
HaShunamit, good, Haftorah of Parshas. Chayesara, anyone has that as a mitzvah parsha? And according to the Gemara now, Sanhedrin Daf Chof, she wanted to be intimate with him. Hey, you know what? I'm going to be the king's wife. I might as well get some benefit from it. So he says to her, no, I cannot take you. I already have 18 wives.
So she says to him, the ganav can no longer steal, and he blames it on his tshuva. Very snarky of her to talk to the king that way. In other words, you're not being intimate with me because you're too old. Right? So David essentially said, I have to atone for taking a woman I shouldn't have by not taking a woman I can. She certainly was permitted to him as a concubine, right? Not a wife, right? So David tells her, I have to do tshuva for taking a woman I should have by not taking a woman I can. That's when she says, the garment can no longer steal. And he says, you can't perform anyway, so that's you blaming it on your tshuva, right? This, what the Gemara says afterwards, should not be said in a Bible class. You have to look it up yourself. So, but Douglas did try to prove that he was still quite virile and youthful. All right, so, Ayin Sham, you can look it up yourself. So tshuva can only really be done in a situation where this situation is replicated. So Yosef is spending 9 years. Could he have come to his father and said, "Daddy, I'm planning out my brother's tshuva. I'm alive." Right? Why Yosef doesn't do that? Chazal say he's punished for that. Right? But we'll get to that another time. But for now, he has to replicate a situation where the brothers fully atone. What is that situation going to be?
Stand up.
So when it says "v'lo yachol od lehisapek," it says he couldn't hold himself in anymore, and he had to tell him, "I'm Yosef," right? It means that he wanted to make this go on longer, right? He wanted to say, "Okay, I'll take Binyamin, you go along and try to tell your father another son of Rachel is gone." Right? How are you going to do that? Right? Now, essentially, this is in my book, actually, but I asked you to read from Vayetze and on, but in my book, it says that when Yosef was in the pit, right, the Tanakh does not tell us what happened in the pit. It just says that when they returned to the pit, he was missing. Later, in Parshas Miketz, when they're running into this trouble, then Reuven says, "I told you we shouldn't do that to the lad, and we didn't listen to his cries, and he was screaming out from the pit, and he was crying, and we didn't listen to him, and now this is happening to us because of that." So my question is, why didn't Parshas Vayeshev talk about those cries? Only later, in Miketz, 20 years later, does Reuven say, "He was crying out from the pit and he begged us to sit down. What are you going to tell Daddy?" Why didn't that appear there? So it's a musr. Is that in Parshas Vayeshev, they were so intent on their plan to get rid of him, that nothing entered in their heads. Guys, how are we going to tell Daddy this? How are we going to watch Daddy for the rest of our lives? Are we gonna? They took an oath. No one should inform. And even Yosef had to take that oath. Yosef doesn't inform his father later what happened. Talk about that too. That's coming up. I close with this, and you can maybe Google this. I saw this for the first time on a screen much bigger than this entire room. It was like an 80-foot screen. And I swear to you, I did not see this. This is what we were told to do. It was a room of Jewish leaders, like 100 Jewish leaders, getting certain exercises. What is this exercise? And again, you can Google it. The exercise was three people wearing three different colored t-shirts, and they're each carrying a basketball, and they're dribbling and passing to each other. Right? And you had to count how many times someone with a red shirt got the ball. Okay? Now, and then at the end, you had to, you know, how many people think 17, how many people 18? I actually got it right. It was 17, I think it was. That was the number. And then they said, "How many of you saw the gorilla?" What? I tell you, I did not see that gorilla.
Yeah.
It's crazy. There was a 90-foot screen, for goodness sakes. And then they said, now watch again. Do not count the balls as they're being passed. I said, that was not what I just saw. Because right in the middle, as they're passing the ball around, a gorilla walks behind them, stops in back of the three people who are passing the balls and does this, and then walks off. I did not see the gorilla the first time. Because I got the number right. Because I was so intent on watching how many of those red shirts were getting the ball, more than one red shirt, that I just focused on that and nothing else. The brothers were so focused on killing him or selling him or getting rid of him that they tuned out all those cries, but they remembered it. The gorilla came back to him. And that's what we have to do for Sefer Bereishis, is to fix this book. Okay, everybody, have a great Shabbos.